Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Which may...
Here's John Williams.
Get me in trouble. Happens sometimes. Kim, stay there. I'm going to need some of your wisdom in just a second. It's 109 on WGN.
Lord have mercy.
This is John Williams. Sure appreciate you tuning in. We're in the All-Case Showcase Studio on... All-Case. The All-State Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. I said, have been captivated by a couple of stories in the news today. One is the continuing fulminations of our president, either about Mitch McConnell or North Korea, pick 'em. And then the Taylor Swift story, which I've been following from afar. Maybe you've been paying closer attention to it than me, but we sort of are paying closer attention today since she was on the stand today and saying very snarky, very confident, and very defensive things, because after all, she said that didn't happen, and or it did. You know, it's a he said, she said. At the end of the day, this is a he said, she said story. The picture in question is not definitive. Until we can get all disc jockeys in America to wear body cams, we're not going to know exactly what happened. So we have this still photograph of this disc jockey, his girlfriend, and Taylor Swift, and everybody is trying to tell what happened on the other side. And you cannot tell. I think the evidence, if you had to pick a side, would be in his favor, because her dress, her skirt is not pulled up as high as I think it would if he was grabbing her bum. But I also think this, but two interesting points about this. One from producer Olive, who said, how do we know that the instant this picture was taken was the instant that she said she was assaulted?
True. And I don't understand why her security guard hasn't come forward, because apparently they're saying that he witnessed this. So if he witnessed it and saw it, why wouldn't he come forward and testify? Maybe he's going to, but I don't know.
Her mother testified and said that she came up to her afterwards and said, Mom, that guy squeezed my ass. I mean, she went right to her mother afterwards, a confidant. I don't know that somebody that, you know, I don't know that you would tell your best friend or your mother a lie. There's no equity in that, right? Maybe, I mean, there's no sense in saying anything here that's not true if you're Taylor Swift. So you'd think, why did she make this happen unless something happened? But it'll be her word against his, because the photo is at least inconclusive. And if you had to conclude based on the photograph, then you would say, well, then he did not do what she said. But like Elif said, maybe the picture wasn't taken at the exact right time. But another quandary for you and I, and this is something you may well have bumped into before too, is suppose his hand was not upper skirt, as she said, but on the outside of her skirt, and he still squeezed. This is 2016-17, and we're having this conversation.
It's crazy. And why would she want to call attention to herself if this really didn't happen? That's my own... I mean, she doesn't need the publicity.
Well, yeah. I mean, he... So shortly thereafter, he gets fired. He says, okay, wait a minute. This isn't fair because it didn't happen. You've cost me $3 million. In fact, he went to a firm that is expert in this sort of thing, and they said, okay, you lost your job as a disc jockey. You're 51 years old. Maybe there's another 10, 15 years tread on your tire as a DJ in Denver. How much money can you expect to earn? What other lost revenue do you have? Anyway, the number they came up with was $13 million. They said he should sue for $13 million. I know a little bit about radio. I know a tiny bit about what disc jockeys get paid. He wasn't out $13 million, okay?
For sure. That we know is definitive. We can say that for sure.
I don't know
all this other stuff going on, who knows? But that we know for sure.
I don't know about the picture. I don't know what happened back there. I know nobody's paying him $13 million. Nobody is paying him $13 million. Not to talk on the radio. Not to spin, even if you're, and you're spinning records, man. By the way, records are flat vinyl services, and there was a group. Anyway, you're not getting paid money to play music like that. No siree, Bob. But I do think that she could make the case, but maybe not as compelling a case, if his hand was on the outside of the skirt. For instance, if Kim, you were there getting your picture taken. We've all done this. We do this every single day. After an interview, we do photo ops every single day for the website. And we all stand around and we put our arms around each other's backs or shoulder or the small of the back or maybe the top of the hip. You know how your hands lay.
And it's awkward because you don't know the person, but you still need to look like everybody's hugging,
having a good time.
Hey, and it is awkward.
Get in here. And it's Taylor Swift, one of the most beautiful, famous electric women on earth, standing next to you. So you put your hand a little lower? I don't know. If he squeezes her on the outside, does that make it less offensive, Kim, than if he squeezes her on the inside of the fabric? Nobody's having that argument.
No.
It's the same crime. Well,
probably go under the skirt, I think, you know, is worse, but to go over the skirt isn't better. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, right. Yeah. John on line 11, you're on WGN. What did you want to say? You're on the air.
How you doing, King John? You know, I was looking at that picture this morning, and if you're going by that picture, you see where his hand is. Look where her hand is. She could be doing the same thing. Look at it.
Her hand is falling down behind his back towards his rear end. His is clearly behind her rear end. Her elbow may be crooked up and coming back up towards his neck. We only, you know, we see the top of her left arm, and it disappears behind him, but it's heading south. It could like one of those stock market graphs, zoom back up at the elbow. We don't know. But, yeah, she could be.
Yeah.
But he's not complaining about that if that's what happened.
I wouldn't either.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for the call. I wouldn't either. See, that's the problem. Men talk like that. Men don't see, and I'm not kidding you about this, the gravity of this. We talked about this in our podcast, The Mincing Rascals, a little while ago. We record that on Thursdays. You can download it later this afternoon. And I sort of regret what I said because I just took the attitude that there you all are, standing there getting your picture taken. His hand fell further south than it should have. And if he squeezed her, he sure should not have. But does that constitute sexual assault? That was the phrase her mother used. Sexually assaulted my daughter. And what do you do about that sort of thing? I mean, what's the appropriate penalty for that sort of thing? And I don't want to sound Don Draper on you, but I think the pendulum can swing too far or too swiftly the other way as well. I can't tell the name. This is BJ. This is John. You're on the air.
Yes. Hi, John. How are you?
Good. What's on your mind?
BJ. What's on my mind is, if he did that to me or my daughter, I'd cut his hand off with a rusty knife. Remember, this is his lawsuit. Looking for money is all he's doing. He's the one who grabbed her. They were not holding each other's backs or hands. He was grabbing her behind. And he deserves to be cut off without a dime and be excluded from any pictures or involvement in her concerts, never again allowed in the house, so to speak. You know what? That's disgusting. And she was ladylike enough not to make a big deal out of it. You're forgetting who's suing who. He is suing her. Hers is a countersuit. She was going to be a lady about it and let it go. And he's a creep and a pig. And he deserves to be sued for within an inch of his life. And never again. Touching me or touching you, would you like it if some lady put her hand on your behind and it wasn't Brenda? How would you like it?
BJ, you're on point. I appreciate your phone call. John, you're on WGN. What do you want to say?
Well, I have to say this. First of all, I've been around a pretty long time, and I would never, ever, ever think of doing something like that. This guy is facing a situation where this could affect his life forever. He may be tagged as a sexual predator under state laws now. I don't feel sorry for this guy at all. If indeed he did do this, my Lord, there's probably right now about 10,000 cases in the United States involving certain degrees of sexual assault.
Well, that's the thing I'm wondering. Thanks for the call, John. How many people have been in the same situation? How many times have you been there at the class reunion or at the wedding or at the thing where everybody stood at the corporate event and you got your picture taken and somebody squeezed you from behind. And either they thought that was funny or they thought you'd jump and then we would all giggle. Please don't hear me to say I'm defending this. I'm wondering how common it is. And I think it is appropriate to ask, what is the appropriate response then? Should the guy lose his job? Should the guy lose his job for that? He did. I mean, that's what really got this thing rolling. And how much money should change hands one way or another if that's what happened?
Can I just add something?
I don't know the answer to that. Go.
As a woman who, I even just someone complimenting me in a certain way, it makes me feel embarrassed, you know? So for someone like her who is a high-profile, she's a high-profile person, and someone is touching her, if that's what's happening, that must be really embarrassing for her. Because you lose all control in that moment.
She didn't say or do anything at the time, though. Some people are judging. Boy, this does sound like victim blaming now, doesn't it, Olive? But she didn't jump. She didn't slap him. Taylor Swift. I mean, have you heard her songs? Why? You know, you would imagine Taylor Swift, if she was singing about this, would have turned and smacked him in the face, right?
Well, yeah, that's true. But she could have also felt really uncomfortable and not known what to do.
I know. Really, in the moment, I'm sure afterwards you go, I should have said this. I should have done that.
Totally.
And by the way, I don't know Taylor Swift's music that well to know how, based on the way she writes her songs, she would or should have responded. So, Steve, if you don't mind, I'd like that stricken from my records. If you could get me a transcript, we'll go ahead and white that out.
You know, I'll take it under consideration, but I'm not willing to grant you that just yet.
Barry is on line three. You're on WGN. Barry, what can we do for you?
Gary?
Yeah, pardon me. Go ahead, sir. Yeah.
As a former bodyguard for rock bands for 17 years, I usually told my clients and the people that I work for, give me a high sign. Let me know that you're uncomfortable. And that was my job, to be in the way and step in. And I don't know why this didn't happen in this case, but I was put in that situation quite a bit. And you know, out in the public or meet and greets, and it was my job to keep an eye on whoever I was protecting, and you know, and if they felt like they were being mishandled or whatever, give me a gesture, a keyword, something, and I'd stepped in.
Was it your experience, Gary, that given the opportunity to fondle, squeeze, kiss, touch inappropriately a rock and roll star or some famous person, that people would take advantage of that situation?
It all depends on a lot of factors. How many drinks have been involved in a meet and greet first, and then, you know, and keep your, you know, part of my job was, I know this is the wrong way to say it, but profile people. If you felt like this person was going to get gregarious or touchy-feely, you know, you kept an eye out, you know, a stricter eye out than normal.
It's too bad for him that the photo was taken when it was taken, because his hand's in the wrong place. And the look on his face, if I could read it, is like, ha ha, boy, have I got a good story to tell now. I'm squeezing Taylor Swift. And that's not fair of me. I don't know what was going on there, but the smirk on his face doesn't help his case.
No, yeah. It doesn't.
Hey, listen, I appreciate you listening. Thanks for calling in. Join us again, Gary.
You're welcome.
Have a good day. It's 122. You can join us, 2-312-981-7200. You can text to 312-981-7200 as well. An ABC reporter who is there will join us at 2 o'clock, right? A little after 2 o'clock. He's been live tweeting what's been going on the stand, and it's been fascinating today. We'll also talk a little bit about Phil. We'll talk with Phil Vitale, the restaurant critic for the Chicago Tribune, why Chicago has been announced as the number one restaurant city in America. All coming up on WGN. I know some of you are saying that she should have just been able to shake it off. Shake it off. You know, I think this thing probably happens like about every day, don't you, Steve? Everybody's in the, I'll bet that plenty of people who are on junkets in Las Vegas or Florida and the corporation is having the annual sales meeting and they're all standing in lines there getting pictures taken. I'll bet bums are getting squeezed all of the time. And I'll bet women are always shocked and offended by it. And I'll bet they almost always, even in this day and age, feel like, look at the women on CNN, or pardon me, Fox News. I'll bet women often feel like they have very little recourse.
Well, this one, she said that it was on her bare skin, too, which I think is different.
You know, Kim and I were talking about that. How much does that change the conversation?
It changes it a lot.
She says it makes it worse, but on the outside doesn't make it right.
Right.
And
right.
I think that's a fair point. I mean, you shouldn't do that either. But if you feel his hand on your flesh, then that's really crossing a line, fella. Honestly, judging by the photograph, I don't think that's what happened there.
Well, the I'm only looking at say, one photograph. She says it is. You know, she says it that is what happened.
Yeah. So I was reading a little bit about him in the Denver Post today, and I don't see anybody saying that he had a reputation as a rogue or some guy that you couldn't trust. If we don't know a thing about this guy. At the end of the day, you really don't know Taylor Swift that well. So it's he said versus she said. And I think whenever it's that, then you assume that if the person can't make their case, then it's not proven. That works for him, I guess, right?
Yeah, but he's suing her because he lost his job, right? Because she complained then to the employer?
Correct. So then they did their own internal investigation. They also looked at the photograph. They then fired him. And then a couple of years later, he sues Taylor Swift, saying, I've lost $13 million, maybe $3 million. So he wants $3 million, and then she has a countersuit against him. It's 127. A couple more of your phone calls here. Hey, Janet, you're on the air. What did you want to say?
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I just wanted to say, I'm not sure how old she is, but I know she's older than 13. And when I was 13, you just hand the hand back to the person who's got their hand in an appropriate situation.
And that's the end of it. You don't go complaining. You don't make more out of it.
If you don't say something right away, I'm surprised he got fired, actually, because I'm surprised that it was taken that far because she didn't say something or react right away. But, you know, I was 12 or 13, so I'm mom's dad, arm around me, you know, looking down my shirt. And I was like, well, you can have your arm back. Just literally picked it up and gave it back to him. And that's all I needed to say. I made my point.
But she did complain right away, right? I mean, she did,
not at the instant the photograph.
Not at the instant.
Moments later.
Moments later, right? Yeah. It's not like she waited months or years.
Well, people are judging her by her reaction at the moment. But I mean, play that out. Listen, the photograph does not support her side of the story, but her actions sort of do. Why would she go to her mom and drop this barrel of lies on some DJ you never heard of, unless it happened? She has no motive to do that. She's there trying to get people to play her records, right? So passing false information about a disc jockey doesn't help. There's no upside in this unless he did something like that. And then it becomes a measure of quality or quantity, right? I mean, how much did he grab? Did he grab her flesh? Did he grab the outside of the skirt? Blah, blah, blah.
I'm not helping you.
You're sitting over there breathing, and I notice I can tell the air's coming in and out of your nose almost every day.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I just understand what you're saying, but there are degrees, but every degree is on the wrong side of right.
Yeah, right, yeah. Sam, you're on WGN Radio. What did you want to say, Sam?
Yeah, hey, John. I just want to say, you had said about class reunions and weddings and pictures and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Well, what about all this deal about wedgies? People going around doing wedgies to people, and they're going, ha, 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 funny, 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 and all this and that. And I agree with what you're saying. I think the case should be thrown out of court because of the fact of the picture. This happened in 2014, and hey, it's one of these deals, like you said, he said, she said, and they're just trying to get publicity. That's my comment.
Thank you for the call. And finally, Carol on line 5, you're on WGN. Carol, what did you want to say?
I wanted to say that I had it happen to me twice, in the sense that once I was in college and a guy behind me, you know, grabbed my butt. I happened to be eating an ice cream cone, so I turned around and plopped it right on the top of his head. So he stood there with ice cream dripping down his face. And then the second time it happened, I was in an office, and a guy came up and made an inappropriate comment and something about a motel. And I just stood up in front of the whole, like, office of 20 people and said, do you know what, you know, stood up real loud and said, do you know what so-and-so just said to me, you know, and said it. And then the guy slinked off. So I think you should handle it yourself.
Thank you for the call, Carol. It's 1:31. Steve Bertrand has WGN Radio News next.
Amazon Echo users, Chicago's conversation is three words away.
Play WGN Radio.
Chicago's news, weather, sports, all three words away.
Play WGN Radio.
Chicago's original social media, three words away. WGN Radio on Amazon Echo. Play WGN Radio.
If you're getting ready to sell your home, wouldn't it be nice to list it with someone who guarantees they'll sell it? List your home today with the Wexler Real Estate Group. If they don't sell it, they'll buy it. Ron Wexler, Tammy Northcutt, and the professional team at Keller Williams Preferred Realty is so confident in their marketing program and experience that they'll buy your home from you if they don't sell it. You'll sell your home faster and for top dollar with the Wexler Real Estate Group. With multiple buyers for every home they list, they'll take the stress out of the process and do exactly what they say they will do. If you're not happy with their performance, you can walk away at any time with no penalty with their easy exit listing agreement. Sell your home faster and for top dollar. If they don't sell it, they'll buy it. That's the Wexler Real Estate Group's guarantee. Call them toll-free now at 1-866-699-6333. 1-866-699-6333. That's 1-866-699-6333. Or online at thewexlergroup.com.
Do you have gold, sterling, or diamond jewelry that you just never wear? Bring it all to MJ Miller & Company. You will be offered a fair price. MJ Miller, your trusted family jeweler.
For the record, he should not have done what she said he did. The picture does not prove the case either way. That's my take on it. I think that's safe ground, Steve. You shouldn't be offended by that position, right?
I'm not offended by anything.
I know that, but I'm just digging myself in a hole, I think, well, it's sometimes just weird because with my probing, and I shouldn't.
I know you do, and that's why we love you. But, I mean, you know, she's coming under fire for raising this where she didn't really. I mean, she's in court today because she was sued by him, right?
Yeah,
and
right.
She's countersuing for a dollar just to say, I'm not just going to defend myself. I'm going to find you guilty.
Tell you exactly
guilty.
What happened, yeah. And really, it's not a small amount that he was asking for. It's $3 million
right.
was
I mean,
what he was saying he was
they're
due.
They're in court because of his action.
By the way, two things that happened in the news we're going to cover in this half hour. One is an expert on North Korea answers a couple questions about, okay, what do we need to pay attention to on that story? And also an attorney for the attorney who is suing Walgreens or McDonald's? Walgreens,
yeah.
We'll have on here.
Okay, I'm sorry. I was a little distracted, Johnny Boy, because Judy Pilek was pointing out some things that are just breaking now.
Sure.
That you
want to
know.
Yep.
The president is making a few statements. I'm not sure exactly where yet. It's not on Twitter. But one of the things he just said was that you can ask the question whether Senate Leader McConnell should step aside if he can't deliver on his agenda. Earlier today, he was tweeting about the fact that the Majority Leader was unable to pass health care after 7 years.
Yeah.
Also, he says, fire and fury, the warning to North Korea. He said maybe the statement wasn't tough enough. He tells North Korea to get their act together or it will be in trouble like few other nations have ever been.
Okay, well, that's him thumbing his nose at us then. Forget about what he's saying to North Korea. That's him just telling the American people and his critics that he doesn't care what they think. And if you want to criticize this president, he'll make it even worse for you. That's a shot at, across your bow. That's not a shot across the bow of the North Koreans. He's already threatened them. He knows we don't like that. So then he doubles down and makes it worse for you and me. That's a message to his critics. That's my take on that. Let's talk to Eric Gomez for a second at the Cato Institute about that very topic. Eric, it's John Williams, and you're on WGN Radio in Chicago. How are you this afternoon?
Hi, John. Well, I was doing a bit better until I heard about that Trump statement about maybe the threat wasn't enough.
Eric Gomez is a policy analyst for defense and foreign policy studies at the Cato Institute, and I have the president's Twitter account in front of me. More of this is about Mitch McConnell. He's gone on a anti-Mitch McConnell harangue on Twitter today, in addition to the comments that our newsman Steve Bertrand just mentioned. Mitch, get back to work and put repeal and replace, tax reform and cuts, and a great infrastructure bill on my desk for signing. You can do it! Exclamation point. And then he's got other general criticism of Mitch McConnell out there. So he's made Mitch McConnell the whipping boy today. But he, and I don't have it on Twitter. Steve, do you know what the source of
it
is?
Yeah, I'm about to get it for you, John. He spoke to reporters in a spray, and we're getting it on tape delay. So we were getting some live feeds from AP, text of what was being said.
Yeah.
And, you know, then they bring it out to the pool, and they turn it around, and I'm expecting any minute now to have the audio if you'd like to hear it.
Jump in here when you do get
okay,
that.
Okay, sure thing.
But if the president is doubling down on that, what do you think about that, Eric? You study this sort of thing.
Yeah, well, I think the initial statement was dangerous enough, much less this doubling down on it. But so the problem with, you know, the United States making an ambiguous threat like this is that it's ambiguous, right? It's hard to tell what exactly is Trump trying to prevent here. Is he trying to prevent rhetorical statements by North Korea? Is he trying to prevent further missile or nuclear testing? Is he trying to, you know, pile on to help them, to help break their back, to get them to denuclearize? And then if the North Koreans don't buy that threat, what are they willing to do to kind of push the envelope? And then does Trump have to respond? So what I worry about here is that by setting a very ambiguous sort of, it's not even a red line, right? By setting this very ambiguous threat to North Korea and not being certain about what Trump would do in response, it kind of invites them to push the envelope as far as they can, because I don't think it's a very believable threat.
Right. Well, it doesn't give him many options, does it? And nobody believes that he's going to start a nuclear war over their perceived and real aggressions.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's the whole point of North Korea's nuclear arsenal in the first place, is to prevent the U.S. from launching the very type of thing that Trump is threatening to.
Did you ever drive down the road and you and your brother or sister were messing around and your mom or dad said, I'll pull this car over, I'll get a belt out, I swear to God, I'll whack you kids to death. And you knew that they weren't going to do that, and so you kept doing that because they never pulled the car over. I don't know. Somehow that analogy seems analogous here.
Well,
that is, we are not going to pull the car over. You know, we're not going to go back there and whack the kids. The kids know that, and so they keep misbehaving.
Well, but I think that's a different threat, right? Because I think with that threat, you know, as you're saying to the kids, stop this specific activity or else this specific punishment will happen. Trump just sort of said they better stop threatening. Well, what's threatening? Is it their language? Is it their actions?
What's your guess on that?
Answer
that question, though. What do you think specifically the president has in mind? Do they need to, I don't know, tear down a nuclear reactor or dismantle bombs or pull troops back from a certain line near South Korea? What specifically does he want them to do that would make him dial down his rhetoric?
I would suspect he'd want to see a calming down of their rhetoric and also a freeze to any sort of missile testing or nuclear testing, but I don't think the North Koreans are going to do that.
If they fire a missile towards North Korea, what do you think, towards Guam, what do you think happens then?
I think I don't think that they would do that out of the blue, right? I think in their statements about Guam and attacking it, they've been pretty clear to draw a line between, you know, detecting a attack on themselves and then attacking Guam before the forces at Guam could get off the ground to attack them. So it is an escalatory threat, but it's not just sort of a we're just going to attack Guam just for the hell of it, right? Because they know that the retaliation would end them. It's more about getting the U.S. to stop making, getting our own side to stop making the threats that we're making against North Korea.
Before I let you go, Eric, anything else? And by the way, Steve, do you have that audio yet in there? Not yet. Erica, before I let you go, any last thing you want to pass along to us to just help us better process this story?
Nothing I can think of specifically, but I worry about unintentional escalation here, right? Trump's communication abilities aren't that great if you're trying to do nuclear deterrence. And I think if he keeps up with the rhetoric and doesn't change it, then the longer he does it, the harder it will get to calm the situation down.
Nice to talk to you this afternoon, Eric Gomez from the Cato Institute, foreign policy analyst. We'll call you again. I appreciate your help.
Thanks a lot.
We had the attorney on the line, and we may be able to reach her yet after the news. She's representing one of the plaintiffs in what they hope will be a class action suit against some of the people that are selling sweet beverages in the Chicago area at too high a price because they are incorrectly charging the sweet beverage tax. Not that anybody can figure it out. I'm still not sure we're suing the right people when we go after Walgreens or McDonald's or 7-Eleven. We'll talk a little bit about that. And Phil Vitale, the Chicago Tribune restaurant critic, says hi in the next hour. Chicago's the best restaurant city in America this year. Phil, give us the highs and the lows of that, will you? Do we have time for one call here, Aleph? I see my screen, and maybe then a break before the news. This is Stuart. You're on WGN. Hi, Stuart. What can we do for you?
From Cicero.
Hey, what's up? What's on your mind?
Yeah, I listen every day, but, you know, Trump, nobody's giving him credit. The guy's been in office 6 months, and he's not a politician, and he's speaking to these other people and talking about other presidents. He's trying to get things done, and this is the way he gets things done in the world of business. I know it's politics, but he's not wishy-washy, and nobody's giving him a chance at all. All that does the media, including you, John, you pay a rap him every day on what he's trying to do. I know he's not the perfect president, and he's not going to be the perfect president. But give the guy a chance to get things rolling. He's got 3.5 years to do it. If you don't like what he does, then he'll be out of office. But the guy's trying to get something done with all the other Obamas that haven't done nothing in 8 years and going all the way back to Bush. You know, he's trying to get something done. He's not taking it from his other leaders. He's saying,
are you worried? Hey, Stuart, are you worried about his ability to handle North Korea?
Absolutely. Without a doubt.
No. You didn't hear me. I said, are you worried about his rhetoric and his ability to handle North Korea?
No, not at all.
All right. I'm glad you're listening, Stuart. We need to remind ourselves that there are people like you out there as much as you remember that there are people like me here. And there are people like Dean Richards did a segment 2 Sundays ago where people called in who still support the president. Not only are they out there, they still listen to this radio station and they still like us. And we really appreciate that. But wow, I am amazed.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Remember,
here's John Williams.
The good old days when a big news story was Taylor Swift and David Mueller. Okay, that's one of the stories we were following at the beginning of the show.
Lord have mercy.
And the president said, nah, I really do think nuclear war is a swell idea. So we'll talk a little bit about both of those stories in this hour. And Phil Vitale says, hi, Chicago, best restaurant city in America. Yeah, you may agree with him on that. I just want to ask him how we got it and what are some of the hot spots that he's loving. Phil Vitale's in our studio in about 30 minutes. Jason Nathanson's been live tweeting for ABC News as the entertainment reporter there. This case of a he-said-she-said squeeze at a photo op in 2013 with Taylor Swift. Jason joins us again on WGN Radio. Jason, it's John. You're on the air. How are you?
Good to be here.
Where is the case right now? Are they recessed? Are they done for the day? What's happening?
They're recessed for lunch right now after Taylor Swift took the stand this morning. First time we've seen her testify, and she was on there for about an hour. Making it very clear that this guy touched her inappropriately, and that it was intentional, she says. She says that at this meet and greet with David Mueller, the former radio personality, who's there with his girlfriend, this was before a concert in Denver in 2013, that Mueller and the girlfriend appeared drunk at the meet and greet. And when they went for the photo, she says that he grabbed her on her butt cheek. She actually used the A word over and over and over again. And I think there was a point to that, because when you say grabbed your behind, grabbed your derriere, when you're kind of demure about it, it doesn't really seem like a big deal. But when you say the A word, I think it really kind of hit home for the jury that this was a sexual assault. So she used that word over and over again, said it was a very long grab, long enough for me to be completely sure that it was intentional. She said the grab was under her skirt. At first, she thought it was a mistake, so she moved on, but it didn't let go. He stayed latched on my bare A cheek as I lurched away from him. I got as far away from him as I could.
Hmm. She's insisting that it was on her flesh. The picture makes it hard to know what's going on behind her. Can you talk a little bit about what both sides are saying about the photograph?
Sure, and she disputed that. When asked about the picture by Gabe McFarland, who's the attorney for David Mueller, she seemed a little annoyed. She seemed annoyed by most of his questioning, but specifically when it came to the picture, she seemed annoyed. She said point blank, "This is a photo of his hand up my dress and on my rear end. I've never said anything different." McFarland on the photo said, "Well, why isn't the front of your skirt someplace else?" Meaning if his hand, David Mueller's hand, was reaching under her skirt from behind, wouldn't the front of her skirt be out of place, rumpled? We would see that, is what he's implying. So he says, "Why isn't the front of your skirt someplace else?" Swift says, "My behind is located on the back of my body."
Yeah.
That's why you wouldn't see it doing like that. And she continued, "Confident, unwavering, my skirt is lifted in that photo," she says, showing it shows the exact moment of the alleged grab. And that's one of the key pieces of evidence that the jury is going to look at. They're going to look at this photo and look for every little instance of what is happening with her skirt. And her mom testified yesterday, if you look at the skirt, there's a part of it on, I think it's Taylor Swift's left side around her hip.
Yep.
The skirt does look like it's lifted up a little or it's out of place.
Yep.
And Taylor Swift's mom said, "Taylor doesn't have an ounce of fat on her body. There's no reason for the skirt to lie like that unless it's being lifted up."
Yep, there's a little point on her left hip, and if the skirt were being raised, maybe that was causing it. But my own read on the photograph all day has been that if he had his hand that far up her backside, that the front of her dress would be more disrupted. But I guess it's her word against his. At the end of the day, is that what the experts are saying, Jason, that it's going to be he said, she said?
Kind of, because there's no real definitive evidence. There, you have the picture that does look awkward, and she admitted that it looked awkward. Her mom admitted that it looked awkward, and he admitted, Mueller admitted, that it did look awkward. But, you know, you have the picture. As far, you'll have other people who are going to testify, I think. Her bodyguard. The photographer who was in the room. But they didn't necessarily see him with his hand up her skirt. And she admitted today, the on questioning from his attorney, asked, "Well, why didn't your bodyguard do something?" And she says, "You know, I'm not critical of my bodyguard." She blames Mueller. And then she was asked by Gabe McFarland, "Is Dent," this is the bodyguard's name, "is Dent your best bodyguard?" And she says she doesn't have a competition with her bodyguards. They're just bodyguards. There's no best or there's no worst.
Yeah, right. Well, what was the amount of time that lapsed between the incident and her telling her mom or anybody else about it?
It was minutes from what I understand. And she was also questioned about why she didn't shut down the photo op right then and there. And she said she had fans who were waiting for hours in line. She didn't want to, you know, ruin their night just because of what this guy did. But she told people pretty immediately what had happened. And then eventually they found the guy and kicked him out of the concert, kicked him off the grounds of the arena.
Really? Well, it's funny. We're all trying to figure this out. And I think the photograph supports his side of the story. But think about it logically. Why would she invent this problem unless something happened?
Right. And that's what she said. She said, you know, "I've done a million of these things." He said, you know, maybe he touched her rib or it was jostling or it was accidental. She said, "I've done a million of these things." There was no jostling. There was no rib touching. She's pointed out that she's experienced plenty of awkward jostling in her career, and this was not that. And that's what the jury is going to have to think about. There doesn't seem to be a logical reason for her to make this up.
Yeah.
But there also doesn't really seem to be a logical reason for him to have done it, unless maybe, as she said, he was drunk, or as her lawyer has tried to point out, that he felt disrespected because he had to wait in the little kid's line for the picture and not the VIP line.
Or maybe he's intoxicated. "Hey, we're all having fun here. It's Taylor Swift. Boy, am I going to have a great story to tell when I say, you know how pretty she is? Well, I squeezed her bare bottom. Ha, ha, ha." And he's got that. So he loses his job after this incident happens. Whatever happened, she reported it. His employer fired him after a couple of days. And then a couple years lapses, and then he wants $3 million. Talk about the timeline on all of this.
Yeah, basically, right after it happened, you know, she reported it to various people. They didn't go to the cops because they didn't want to make it public, but they went to the radio station and said, "Hey, do something about this." And they had a little mini, quote-unquote, investigation. fired him a day or two later. They are pretty quick with that. Then they thought that that was the right thing to do. The guy who runs the radio station is actually the guy who's on the stand right now there at lunch, but he's the guy who's testifying, and said basically that Mueller's story changed a couple times. It seemed like he was lying, so they were fine just firing him. So after that, though, it was 2 years. He couldn't get a job, he says. He applied in a bunch of top 20 markets. He was basically blackballed, blacklisted, however you want to say. Because of this thing that happened, it got out. People knew, and nobody was going to hire him. So that's why, after searching for a job for 2 years and not being able to find one, he decided, well, I'm going to sue Taylor Swift for defamation because this thing never happened as far as I'm concerned. So I'm going to sue her because she cost me my job, and I want $3 million.
And this, what we're witnessing today, is her countersuit against him?
It's both of them together, actually. Both suits are on trial at the same time.
Got it.
He sued for the defamation and the money, and so she decided she was done with the whole thing. In her mind, it was taken care of. He was fired. That was it. But once he sued, she decided, well, I'm going to have to countersue then, and I'm going to make this public, and I'm going to make this a thing because I'm suing you for assault and battery because you're bringing this up 2 years later. Why are you doing that? So I'm going to sue.
Jury of eight people, six of them are women. Her mother used the phrase sexual assault. You did a moment ago. How does that play into all of this?
That's what they're calling it, and that's part of her testimony today, and I think why she tried to get as graphic as possible, say that she was touched on her bare cheek, over the dress or over the underwear. Not that it matters or either one of them are appropriate, but a lot of people have said in talking about this in the court of public opinion, what's the big deal? You know, he touched her butt, no big deal. But if his hand is on her bare cheek, that's clearly something that's inappropriate. So they're making a point that this is sexual assault. This can't happen to anybody, whether you're a big star or you're a nobody that the public doesn't know. It's not appropriate.
When does this go to the jury, Jason? What's the guess on that?
It's supposed to be a 9-day trial. It seems we're moving pretty quick here.
9 days. Okay.
9 days. So I would imagine sometime next week it's going to go to the jury.
And I guess this resonates a lot more than that incident. I mean, it must speak to a million incidents like this for pop stars, for, as I've been imagining, business executives and employees at retreats where everybody's taking that same dang picture and somebody's had a cocktail, they're getting frisky. It'll be interesting to see what sort of precedent a case like this sets.
And that's why she said that she sued, because this is not... If this happened, and we don't know definitively one way or another, but if this happened, this is not okay. And it happens over and over and over again. We all have stories of it. We all have mothers, wives, sisters who know of these things that have happened throughout their lives. And Taylor Swift is standing up against it.
Reporting for ABC News, the entertainment reporter Jason Nathanson. Jason, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks for joining us today.
Sure thing. Take care.
217 on WGN. So he's in Denver. Here in Chicago, I want to go back just for a minute to the attorney who is behind this class action suit against Walgreens because of the soda tax. Listen, the Chicago Tribune editorialized again today. They said, Madam Chairwoman, rescind this tax. They want the soda, the sweet beverage tax to go away in Chicago. And not only that, but some of the retail points aren't appropriately charging for the tax either. So now some of them are suing Walgreens. Boy, Walgreens is just sitting there going, look, we didn't want the tax either. It's very complicated for all of us, and now we get sued. Thanks a lot. The law firm behind that joins us next here on GN. Elizabeth Fagan joins us now, and I'm glad she was able to pick up our phone line. Elizabeth is an attorney with a law firm, and the name of it is written right here. Elizabeth is an attorney with Higgins, Berman, Sobel, and Shapiro. She is at least on the team that is representing Vincent De Leon and is presumably part of a class action suit against Walgreens about this sweet beverage tax we have in Cook County. Beth, it's John Williams. You're on WGN Radio. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Really good. So Vincent works for your firm. Is that correct?
No, he does not. He is just a regular consumer in the city of Chicago who went out one day to purchase an unsweetened beverage and was charged a tax.
Sometimes I know that attorneys or say, groups or associations that want to make the case will find someone to be that, you know, patient zero or X. Is that what happened here? Did you all look for somebody just to make the case? Or did he come to you and say, hey, I'm upset about this?
He came to us and said he was upset about it. And we've actually been contacted by a number of residents and consumers in Cook County who are upset because they're buying just regular old water or an unsweetened beverage or 100% fruit juice and getting taxed when they shouldn't be.
In his case, what exactly happened?
He went to the Walgreens in Hoffman Estates. He bought some Dasani Tropical Pineapple Sparkling Water, and he was charged 96 cents on a $3.79 purchase. And in his case, actually, he didn't know that it was improper. When he went to the checkout, the cashier said, "Oh, that's strange. I didn't know that this should be taxed like that." And it caused him to follow up on it after he left the store to figure out what happened.
Did he take it back to the store and say, "Hey, I want a refund of the 96 cents?"
He did not. A number of people have tried with Walgreens. Folks have even posted it on Twitter and on Facebook, contacting Walgreens for a refund. And as of yet, no one's been provided a refund.
But Walgreens said it was inadvertent, that they're not trying to screw people here. It's complicated for all of us. Are you sympathetic to that?
I am sympathetic to that, but there are some easy fixes. Certainly, while they may have coded it wrong in their system, they could alert their cashiers to the problem or their store managers to the problem so that they're caught when people are checking out and some type of credit is given. But just because they've made a mistake and know that there's a mistake, they can't continue to do it to people who are unsuspecting.
I wonder what the remedy of this would ultimately be. So Walgreens says, okay, we'll work harder on fixing that. But are we talking about a class action suit here?
We are talking about a class action suit. If Walgreens doesn't provide refunds voluntarily, that would be the remedy that we would seek, some type of fund or common fund that people could come in with their receipts or some type of demonstration that they paid the tax and get a refund for the overcharge.
I get that you need to discipline companies or maybe make them make recompense because they improperly charge somebody. But who's got a receipt from a Dasani bottle this week, you know?
Well, the interesting part is there has been a lot of attention this week, and I think people are becoming aware and going back and pulling their receipts out of their pockets and out of their purses and making sure that they're holding on to them. But you are right. It's tough, and companies know that they can get away with this because people don't keep receipts for small purchases.
Yeah, and usually the remedy then is they say, okay, well, anybody who bought a sweet beverage in Cook County starting August 1st through August 30th will give you a 20-cent off coupon or something like that. And I guess that's better than nothing. But do you foresee something like that as being the resolution to this?
For us, we prefer not to go the coupon route. Why that really just puts money back in Walgreens' pocket when, you know, somebody might choose not to shop at Walgreens again or certainly might be scrutinizing their purchases better. So really, it should be a straight refund.
I've sent my friend David here, who works with us on the show, over to the Walgreens across our street when we heard about Mr. DeLeon's case. And we bought a Dasani Black Cherry Sparkling Sweetened Water, or unsweetened. You know, the tax should not have been applicable in what we thought was a similar product. The Walgreens on Michigan Avenue did not charge the tax. They appropriately charged us a sales tax, but not a sweet beverage tax.
I think that that's good to hear. We certainly know that that product has been charged the sweetened beverage tax in other places, including in Western Springs. But certainly if stores are fixing the problem or Walgreens is fixing the problem in some type of slow rollout, you know, we applaud that.
Does your firm sort of specialize in these sorts of situations?
We certainly specialize in class actions and consumer products. Yes, but that's our bailiwick.
I wonder if people are angry, not so much at Walgreens, but at Cook County. They're really mad at Tony Preckwinkle, and their Walgreens is caught in the middle, suddenly having to roll out a tax which is complicated for any of us to understand. And it's almost inevitable that 7-Eleven or McDonald's or somebody's going to get it wrong.
I think that's true. People are upset with Cook County and don't think that the tax is fair, particularly on top of all the other taxes we pay. That being said, the stores have known about this since November of 2016. It hasn't been a secret. The retailers even took steps to try and delay the implementation of the tax. So they've had, you know, nearly 8 months to properly roll this out. And a lot of stores have gotten it correct and aren't charging it on unsweetened beverages. So certainly it could have been done.
You think they're doing it because they want to keep the extra money?
I think that that's certainly a possibility.
What's your advice to people who are buying sweet beverages in Cook County now?
Buy them elsewhere.
I thought you were going to say keep your receipt.
Well, if you're buying an unsweetened beverage, absolutely keep your receipt. If you're buying a sweetened beverage in Cook County, you're going to be taxed.
Yeah, or maybe not. For that matter, maybe this happens sometimes too, where you worry you get overcharged when you're self-scanning or the checkout person is scanning your items. As often as not, I understand, the store is the one that's getting screwed. They could have the coding wrong the other way too.
That's true. A store could, and the store is responsible under the Cook County ordinance to collect the entire amount of that tax from the consumer and remit it to the county. And if they don't do that, I think that there are penalties on that retailer.
Elizabeth Fagan, are you? I'll let you go here, Elizabeth. We'll stay in touch. But are you representing this Mr. DeLeon in the case against Walgreens? You're not involved in the 7-Eleven or McDonald's cases then, huh?
That's correct. Just the Walgreens case.
We sure appreciate your time this afternoon. We'll be in touch.
Thank you for having me.
You betcha. Elizabeth Fagan represents a man named Vincent DeLeon, and she's from Hagen's Berman Sobel Shapiro. It's 228 on WGN. I think Chris had a comment about this story. Hey, Chris, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, first off.
Hey, thanks for joining us.
No, thank you. If this is for really a health issue for the sweetened drinks, then why don't they just eliminate taxes on fruits and vegetables?
Do you pay
and all the healthy food?
Yeah, right. So that would give us more of a financial incentive to eat and drink right, right?
Correct.
Do we tax food when you go to the grocery store? Yeah, you pay tax at the end of a
absolutely
food purchase. So if you're buying cauliflower or broccoli, that should be just
exactly
the retail cost.
Correct.
All right. When I get to be king, I want you to write this down, Chris. I'm going to put you in charge of taxes. You will be the tax commissioner when I get to be king. Okay.
Be more than happy to.
Happy to serve. I'm talking to Phil Vitale off the air. I guess we should do it on the air as well.
Focus a little bit.
Phil, welcome to our studio. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Restaurant critic for the Chicago Tribune. You read him Wednesdays. You can read him online more frequently than that. Bon Appetit is named Chicago as the restaurant city of the year. It was San Francisco. Then it was Washington, D.C. For a few years now, they've been doing this, and now it's our turn. And
it's our turn.
It's not our turn. We earned it, right?
We earned it. This is our neener moment. We get to, as I said when I posted the story online, take that, Sacramento. We're not. We don't have to apologize to those guys anymore. We are number one, and we'll be. I don't know. They haven't. Bon App hasn't done this often enough for me to know whether they would ever be a repeat winner.
This is only the third time.
So, right. So this is only the third year. So maybe we'll hang on to this crown.
Do we do it because of a couple of shiny stars or just for the totality of it all?
Well, in the article they wrote in praise of Chicago, they really focused on the newer, very small, very personal restaurants. They were excited about places like Giant. They were excited about Fat Rice and particularly its new bakery. They were excited about that tiny little Mexican restaurant in Logan Square called Mi Tocaya. So they, of course, know about Alinea. They, of course, know about the other big dogs in town. But what made Chicago exciting to them was how many of these small and personal and really, really well-focused restaurants this town supports.
What does a small personal restaurant mean?
Place like, well, when the chef has minimal assistance, when the...
How many seats?
Oh, a lot of these places we're talking about have fewer than 35.
Are 70. You kidding? Really?
No. Some restaurants such as MFK up on Diversity,
but
they have their
we're a metropolitan area of 8 million people. What's the point then of having a restaurant and giving us an award when only 35 or 50 or 75
right.
people can sit there?
Right. If you did it on based on the one restaurant, absolutely. But since what I think Bon Appetit is talking about is that this is our scene now. We're opening more places like Giant that has fewer than 35 seats and Mi Tocaya that has, yeesh, I'm thinking like about 20-ish seats.
What about Smith and Loyalist? Are they smaller places?
They're
too?
Not as small. Smith keeps its numbers pretty low, although it's certainly got enough space. They could be a 60-seat restaurant if they want to. I don't think they want to. Downstairs, Loyalist is subterranean, and you probably can pack about 40-something people in there.
Okay, but I like to eat at Lowry's. You can put about 1,400 people in
there.
Yeah. You know, I like to go to Bandera up here. It's nearby. It seems to work for me. They can put over 100 people in there.
Right. The difference is how much can you afford to pay for rent?
Are these that's interesting. But, I mean, are these places all then fairly expensive because they're so exclusive and small?
Actually, no. I think in some cases they've managed to keep prices down. probably because they're not paying as much labor when you have the chef and the owner as one of the people who is actually cooking your food as opposed to directing as a maestro would for the 20 or so minions he has at his disposal. The cost drives the food cost down.
And is this a new trend in Chicago?
It's relatively new in Chicago. It has been state of the art in New York City for a while now. It's what you see more often than not in San Francisco and Tokyo.
What are some of the equivalents then that I've heard of in New York? I know some of those restaurant names. Maybe San Francisco would resonate with our listeners. What are their equivalents that we're talking about?
I'm blanking on the. It'll come to me in a second. I was thinking Cosme in New York is not an especially big place. Alex Stupak's restaurant in New York is really tiny, and my apologies to Mr. Stupak because his name of his restaurant has just jumped out of my head.
But it's a way to make a name, huh? Do it well. Keep it small. You don't have to multiply it by five.
One thing that helps a lot now than wasn't true 20 years ago, you open a restaurant 20 years ago and you wait for word of mouth and people kind of find out about you and then you get a few more people and in the fullness of 3-4 months, the critic finally shows up and says something nice about you and then you're on your way. Now you open up and somebody has yelped a review while you're still hanging the drapes. So for better or worse, people find out about you immediately.
Does it work both ways? Do you know
that
you're going to be a flop quicker maybe now as a result?
It could be. A couple of early online reports can be more devastating.
What do you make about that?
Well, it's the marketplace of ideas. It can be there are good aspects to it. There are aspects that trouble me, but it's reality.
Maybe it's not fair. Maybe they're just working out the kinks. Maybe their competition posted the Yelp review.
Oh yes, I online reviews that are anonymous drive me out of my mind.
Because it threatens you.
No, it doesn't. I don't think it does because they know who I am and I've been doing this for a long time. And if they don't like what I wrote, that's pretty easy to find on the phone or on email.
Say, everybody recognize you when you walk in?
No. I'm still doing okay on that. Although if it's an important downtown place, yeah, as soon as I hit the door, it's, you know, the Pope is here.
I notice your avatar, though, doesn't have your picture on it.
No.
I thought, well, okay, some do that, some don't. At some point, some of them just say, oh, who are we kidding here? And they come out, as
quite a few have done that.
But you're still a little bit under that radar.
I've resisted for two reasons. One, it's a bell you can't unring. If I do it and it doesn't work out, I can't go, you know what, I'm anonymous. Forget everything I said before and burn those pictures. Two, even when I'm recognized when I walk in the door, and if I've done my prep work right, I haven't used my name when I made the reservation or anything like that. So they know I'm here only because I'm here. The owner can't run out and retrain the staff, can't send out for better veal, can't remake his stock. So the food is what it's going to be. And the fact that I'm trying to remain anonymous, even in those instances where I fail, I think still puts up that arm's length, leave me alone sort of thing. Whereas,
do you order more than one entree?
Not if I'm eating by myself.
Yeah, right. Do some of them? I mean, you know, maybe you could, you know, kill two birds with one stone. I'll have the steak and the fish.
I would think that would be so crazy obvious that you wouldn't want to do that. But plus, I don't know that no one does it.
And maybe it's hard to know if that's not how people eat. If you want to have an experience for the potential for the reader, maybe it's not fair to judge the steak and the fish at the same time.
Possibly not. Yeah. Although, in that case, you're probably eating a third of the fish and a third of the steak. And the nice thing about steak is after two bites, you sort of get it.
It's not going to evolve.
It's not a bottle of fine, rare wine that's going to open up in the next 40 minutes or so. You've had your bites, you're done.
What are some of the bigger restaurants that you're enjoying in Chicago right now? These are the small ones, and that seemed to be really what won us this Bon Appetit Best Restaurant in the Country Award.
Right. Well, there's place that opened. I'm trying to think of a place I've been to that's pretty large. I'm still amazed at how many good steakhouses we have. I still can't believe that. I keep thinking one is eventually going to open and no one's going to show up because we have too many steak restaurants. But it doesn't happen. And places such as Maple and Ash and Swift and Sons are just extraordinary in how they execute what they execute. And then you get Giuseppe Tintori opening up his place called GT Steak, which does not do large steaks, but does very small portions.
Oh, really?
Of steak.
Boy, that's a knock. That's a knock. You know, it's funny because I love going to these steak places. Steve and I went to one recently. Steve, what was the name of the place that you and I went to? I'm not sure if he's dialed in now. He's getting ready for the next newscast. Steve and I went with somebody to. Steve, what was the name of the steak restaurant you and I went to the other day?
Maestro.
Maestro or Mastro?
Maestro, sure.
Yeah. And it was terrific. big old honking.
Right, doorstops.
But I know that, and it's funny because everybody seems to do it that way, and it's always good. It's a really seared, beautiful steak the size of a doorstop. And then a baked potato from Mars and, you know, really large. The desserts are overwhelming. The cocktails were good. We had a nice time there. Yeah. But I've often wondered, is there ever a way to eat at a steakhouse and not feel terrible the next day?
Yeah, actually, there are. There are places that are using doing smaller steaks and starting to get an audience for that because, again, the default is if this piece of meat is not larger than my head, I'm being ripped off somehow.
Well, especially for what you pay for it.
Right. Well, some of these aren't. What Giuseppe Tartari is doing at GT Prime is he's using very carefully trimmed pieces of meat, and he sells them in 4 or 8 ounce portions. And you think, a 4 ounce steak, are you kidding me? But when you realize this is a steak bereft of excess fat that has no bone on it, that is nothing but pure, absolute beauty, bite after bite, you know, 4 ounces is, I hate to say it, what the nation's dietitians say is what we're supposed to be doing for a meal.
Don't say that. I'll have that stricken from the records of this show.
But the other, one of the things he does is he'll have different cuts of meat and even different animals. He'll have venison and he'll have a buffalo. And so what you can do is you can do 4 ounces of this one and 4 ounces of that one and make yourself a little 12-ounce sample plate.
Oh, nice.
Have 3 animals on a plate and you're still not eating a grotesque amount of beef.
Like a flight of whiskeys, only in this case, it's animals. And what's the name of that place you're talking about?
GT Prime.
GT Prime. That's downtown?
Yep.
Just real quick, then, let's touch bases on these one more time, Phil. Giant, you like?
I love Giant.
And what's the cuisine there?
Well, the guys there at Giant, they defy easy generalizations. He'll do a couple of pastas. He'll do a chicken here. I guess you'd call it American, but it's really everything that occurs to him, and the flavors are bold. And he does a tortellini, which is supposed to have a specific shape, but he noticed in making it when he rolls out the pasta and cuts out that shape, he has all this pasta dough that's going to get wasted. He didn't want to do that, so he came up with a design that uses more of it, but it's not really strictly tortellini anymore. So it's on the menu and it's called sortellini.
Because it's sort of like tortellini.
Right. But he's not lying to you, and he's giving you a really good pasta dish.
Meat tocoya, that's Spanish-inspired food or Mexican?
No, Mexican.
Mexican food?
Diana Davila is a young chef who's doing terrific work in a very, very intimate restaurant.
Elsk?
Elske, yes. It's the Danish word for love.
So Danish food?
No, it's not. It goes really from, it takes its name really from a Danish sense of hospitality. The chef is originally from Denmark, but his people are, and he would go there all the time. And it's David Posey and his wife Anna. He proposed to her in Denmark, and now they use the word love because they're working side by side and creating really fun food. He was, for a while, the head chef at Blackbird.
Hmm. So what am I going to get when I go there? American?
It'll be creative food. There'll be all kinds of different influences. One of the things we're finding in the last couple, 3 years is that regional and national labels are falling off restaurants as though we had just sticky noted them on the outside of the door.
And you may not like that, and I'll bet they like it even less. That is, don't worry about the label. It's a good restaurant. And maybe it's one, you know, influence or another, but don't worry too much about what am I going to see.
Right.
Just go to the place.
Chefs hate the question, what would you call your food? And they go, they take a big breath and they don't want to do that. But they, you know, Elski, is it this? Is it that? Is David Posey and Anna Posey, and it's their food. And that's why we're finding a lot of restaurants coming up that are so intimate, because this is food. This is an expression of what this particular chef or chefs feel is vital and delicious and honest, and that's what they cook.
Phil Vitale posts tomorrow. We read you in the Tribune on Wednesday, right?
Please do.
Yeah, thanks for coming down.
My pleasure.
Bon Appetit said, best restaurant city in America. Those are some of the reasons why. Your president has been speaking to you today, and I mean you, Mitch McConnell. Here are some of the latest tweets. My first order as president was to renovate and modernize our nuclear arsenal. It is now far stronger and more powerful than ever before. Hopefully, we'll never have to use this power, but there will never be a time that we are not the most powerful nation in the world. The president has since doubled down on his North Korea statement. Steve had the audio for us a little while ago. You'll hear it again at the news at the top of the hour. The president said to the people who think that his fire and fury statement was too forceful, he thinks it was not strong enough. He literally doubled down on what he said today. Senator Mitch McConnell said, "I had excessive expectations, but I don't think so. After 7 years of hearing repeal and replace, why not done?" he tweeted. This, by the way, from a man who's on vacation. Then he tweeted, "Can you believe that Mitch McConnell, who has screamed repeal and replace for 7 years, couldn't get it done, must repeal and replace Obamacare." And then he tweeted, "Mitch, get back to work and put repeal and replace tax reform and cuts and a great infrastructure bill on my desk for signing. You can do it." I'm not exactly sure how the "you can do it" part goes. It's either "you can do it," like, "come on, honey, come on, honey, you can do it." Or is it "you can do it, but you're just not gonna because you're a feckless, ineffectual jerk." I'm not exactly sure which one it was. "You can do it," exclamation point. I don't know if that helps. So those are some of the president's tweets and thoughts today. And what he said about North Korea and the way he said it, you will hear, if not in the news at 3. I don't know, Judy, are you guys playing the audio of the president at 3 o'clock in the newscast of what he said at that little scrum today?
Yes, okay. Of course.
And it's, well, I won't characterize it. Lord knows Roe will, and that's coming your way next. 'Cause I knew you were trouble when you walked in. So shame on me now, blew me to places I've never been. That could be Roe's walk-up song. I knew you were trouble when you walked in. Don't we run into a version of that every day,
We
Anna?
Do, and I am Team Swift on this one. I just want to go on the record for that.
Well, here's what we're all doing. We're judging the guilt or innocence of this DJ guy based on one picture.
Yeah.
We're also assuming that the picture was taken at the moment of the alleged crime.
Well, yeah. That's the assumption.
What if that happened before or after? What if he did it? Because my assessment of the photograph is, Your Honor, and this has got more attention than the Zapruder film, that there's no way his hand is touching her
not
flesh because the front of the dress is not sufficiently hiked or ruffled.
She said, "I've never been more sure of anything in my life."
She was convincing. She's very compelling.
We have the mighty Ro and Anna, mighty art players. So yeah. We use mighty twice in their description.
It's very mighty.
It's so mighty.
Bigly, mighty, have done
a recreation.
Oh Lord.
Of this.
You did not.
Yeah.
And did you really?
So, yeah.
Did you videotape it?
Well, no. Of the court appearance. You'll be hearing that a little bit later on in the program.
No kidding.
The court, yeah.
You're going to read. You're going to reenact her snarky
reenacting
remarks?
her testimony. You're calling it snarky. That's judging, John. I would say
we never do that on our show.
No, we don't judge.
We're not judgy.
We don't judge.
Right.
We posted what we thought was a pretty funny video today, and then I had my video like juju going. So I said, "I know. Let's reenact the scene of the crime." And Elifa's standing there, and she doesn't have
boy.
A... I know.
This is how you get fired, John.
Exactly. Yeah. I thought, well, this is a bad idea, but I'm wearing a blazer. So I said, well, let's hike up. Try and put your hand on my rear end. What are you going to have to do? You got to lift up the back of my blazer. And when you do so, the front of my blazer will adjust. So doesn't that tell us something about...
Oh, this is very much, if the glove don't fit, you must acquit.
If the blazer don't move, then you got a groove.
Yeah, yeah.
Then
hey.
How'd she call her mom, though, so upset right after? I mean,
Why would she invent this if, in fact, she didn't have a legitimate claim?
How many meet and greet photos with baby DJs do you think she's done in her career?
A thousand zillion.
How many in a little corner of this world? How many people have we taken pictures with? About 4 a day.
We do it every single day with every single guest, and then sometimes folks.
Yeah. And how many times have you played grab ass, John?
I did with Phil Vitale, but he asked me to.
Well, he liked it. It's different if it's welcome, but this was not welcome.
He had a sign that said "Your hand here," so that's how I knew.
I think that's a little. That's interesting.
But you know what? I think this resonates beyond the sort of just fascination with this one story. Is how many people you're right though that are at conventions or family or class reunions. Everybody's had a cocktail and somebody's doing something totally inappropriate. I
Well, she's arguing a little bit here that the guy might have been
inebriated.
Drunk.
Yeah, sure. And maybe he was. Mm-hmm. I also think
it would not be unusual in radio. I would like to point that
out.
You
look at the expression on this guy's face and you think he's thinking, I'm going to have a great story to tell.
You know, here one would do. Mm-hmm. Even though I am a baby DJ right here.
Where is he in? Nashville or
Denver?
Denver.
And he's 51 years old in this picture, by the way.
Yeah, he's still a baby
the same
DJ.
Age as her mom, by the way.
Oh, that's kind of icky. All right, so you guys can talk about that. What else are you going to talk about?
The president has just spoken, and I think he's going to speak again. We're going to play a little bit of that. Mike Rogers is going to join us. When he was in Congress, he headed the Intelligence Committee, and so he knows the whole thing. He also was a big FBI bigwig, and so he is going to talk to us about North Korea, and should we all be worried?
President needs to go on a vacation from his vacation. You know what I mean? He's not supposed to be doing stuff
right now.
This
doesn't seem like a vacation.
You know what he's got, which is amazing? He's got a big door in Bedminster. They only have people like around the, you know, the stairs. You know, everything he does sort of like European royalty. That's his, you know, he built everything. So he's got one of those big sort of rounded doors. You know, go in and they open and they close. It's such a strange visual for Americans, you know, who are sort of not used to the whole this whole concept. But He got up there and he said, maybe I wasn't tough enough on the North Koreans in my rhetoric, and maybe we got to double down. But he's having a meeting, then he's got more of a conversation, and we'll just have to see. So all that's coming your way. A special news or ruse is going to play today. You're not going to want to miss that.
Nope.
And I think the most important moment of the day, Ed Obradovich is going to be here.
Yay,
we were
going to
have Sweet Lou today. Sweet Lou is going to be tomorrow. Ed Obradovich is going to be today to talk about the Bears as they get prepared for their first preseason event.
Has John Fox heard you?
I don't think so. Right, Kev? What's he talking about?
I would love to get his take. I'd love to hear the two of you talk for a while.
we'll hear plenty of Coach John Fox today.
It's coming up right here. Yes, he's had a lot to say.
All right.
Fox on Fox. We could do that.